So this week, we are going to be workshopping article ideas to match magazines. But first, I found some very interesting things in the emails that you guys sent me with your ideas. There's a couple of things that we've talked about before, and so I'll point out some blog posts that people should maybe go back and give a read. And also, there were some things that we haven't talked about too much that I wanted to bring up. So first and foremost, if you are writing the article idea before you send the pitch, stop, go to the blog, read the blog post titled, Never Write the Story First, number one. Okay, now that that's out of the way, as we workshop ideas, I just want to warn you that I might sound a little bit stern and say, no, this isn't an idea. I don't mean that in a bad way. I want to save you time. I know a lot of you have said, I've been pitching this idea for a while. I've been pitching this idea to this many places. And the thing is that what you're pitching them is a topic and not an idea, and we'll get into that. And once you make some tweaks to it, you'll have much better success. So everything we're doing today, think of it as like tough love if you want, but it's really meant to save you time so that rather than, you know, sending an idea around to 10 places, you're going to spend 10 times as long making sure that's a good idea and send it once and get that story published, okay? All right. So in order to make sure that we're all on the same page with what a story idea looks like, before we're going to get into workshopping your ideas, there's two things that I want to do quickly. One is to look again, and we did this quickly last week for those of you that were on the call last week, but I want to look again at some specific types of article sections in popular magazines. And we just added Travel and Leisure and a couple of big airline magazines to the database, so those are the ones that I'm going to use today. And then I'm going to go through a couple issues that I saw with some of the ideas that you guys sent over, and also just some general things to remember to make sure that what you're pitching is an article idea, not a topic. And then we're going to get into your ideas, and we're going to workshop them two ways. So some people sent me ideas that were more niche, and I totally said that you could send me either pitches or things that were very introductory, and that's great because it gives us two different levels that we can look at ideas. So some people sent me quite developed pitches, and with those we're going to do those second because it's further along, but with those we're going to talk about specific places those can go, and I'm going to go into my web browser and open up the magazine database and we'll look through that for those. But with the ones that are earlier stage, I'm going to walk through, especially if the people are here, I can unmute and walk through live, but we're going to walk through how you take those ideas and turn them more into the pitchable, ready-to-go ones that we're going to talk about later at the end of the call. And I am a former magazine editor and a contributing editor, which means a frequent contributor to many publications. So I've been on both sides of the desk, and everything that I tell you is both as a seasoned freelancer and also somebody who's used to looking at pitches on the other side. All right. So let's look at the kinds of hyper-specific ideas that magazine editors are really looking for. Okay, so a lot of these slides are going to have a ton of text, and I'm going to read out the important parts to you, so don't worry if you can't read it or if you're just listening along from your phone. So Travel and Leisure is one of these publications that everybody would love to write for, right? But how many things do they really have open to freelancers? In theory, a lot of their features are written by freelancers, but it takes a while to become a trusted enough freelancer to get those assignments. So if you are a newer writer, or just a newer writer to Travel and Leisure, what can you pitch them? They have several different types. We talk a lot about article formats. So these are different article formats that Travel and Leisure has available to freelancers. So what service means, service in the journalism setting means how-to style content, okay? So they actually have quite a few opportunities for short service things. However, if you look at the ones we've highlighted here, one is called Safety for the Smaller Set, about measures parents can take to keep their kids safe while traveling, and one is called Bidding Your Way into Business Class, which is about how to win upgrade bids to get a business class seat on your next flight for the least amount of money. These are quite general, and this is something to keep in mind. We're going to talk later in the call about when you should pitch an idea at the local or regional level, and when you should pitch an idea at the national level. And this is a really important thing to look at to make sure that your idea actually does match a magazine. Is does this section in the magazine typically feature things that apply to a very, very wide range of people in a usable format, or things that are very specific but give people an armchair travel experience? So in this case, they want the Travel and Leisure wants their upgrade section to apply to the most people possible. So something like how to experience Taiwan as a first-time visitor, which is an idea we're going to talk about later, would be too specific of a service-type article for this section. Okay. Travel and Leisure also has a really nice short section that's a food profile called Worth Flying For. And it's a second person article. So this wouldn't be you talking about your experience, but this would be you writing for someone else so that they can envision themselves having the same experience. And it has to be highly detailed, so you need to have gone there before. But keep in mind, Travel and Leisure pays $1 and up a word, so even though this is only 200 words, you're still going to be getting $200 for that incredibly short piece. All right, they also have quite a few little, they say short, but 500 to 600, you know, again, at that dollar a word rate is not too short. Trend-related or travel news or short new things that, in this case, we've mentioned one that's about Hawaiian chefs that are bringing traditional native food to the mainland. These are things that a lot of the type of, you know, I've pitched this to my local magazine, articles that you guys have been telling me might fit in this kind of thing if they're new enough. And this is why we're going to talk about how to take something that you may think of as a regional or local story and instead give it a national bent. Now, the next thing that you see in here, and you're going to see this in another couple of the magazines that I brought up, is essays. Now, essays are sort of the, I don't know if gold standard, but essays are the things that a lot of people get into travel writing wanting to write, and that a lot of people who come over from blogs are used to writing. And so essays, however, unfortunately, are quite rare to find. And so when you see an essay section in a magazine, it's always worth noting it, ripping out a couple pages for later, you know, copying out that section from the travel magazine database, what have you, because these sections can be hard to come by, but they can be really great fits for places that really, where you've been somewhere and you had something that was an experience that really needs to be told in a story, as in beginning, middle, end format, as opposed to a roundup or something like that. So Travel and Leisure has a really nice either 1,500 or 500 word long story section in here, which can be a great place not only to get a story in Travel and Leisure, but to publish those sort of things that are just really, really unique experiences that you're looking for a home for. All right, Delta Sky is a very popular airline magazine. I think you can even buy it on the newsstand that we just added to the database recently. And they use really a lot of freelancers. You know, I was looking through a good batch of our recent articles to find things to feature here. And this was probably one of the most robust things. In fact, I've even left off the features and a couple other things that were available to make it fit on this slide. But again, things fall into very specific article types. So Delta has a lot of shorts that are open to freelancers. They have this Wheels Up section. And this is composed of a couple different things that we featured here. There's the, I want to say it's the Pop Biz or the profile. Oh, yeah, it's the profile further down, the breakaway and the trending up here are all part of this Wheels Up section. So a lot of you guys have mentioned things to me like you went to a certain city or you're about to go to a certain city that you want to pitch something like a 48 hours in or something that, like that. The issue is a lot of times, especially for writers who come from blogging, we have a certain idea about the format, but that's not actually what would work in a magazine. So for instance, if you wanted to write a 48 hours in, I remember I used to have a writing gig for a Italian boutique sort of concierge travel planning company. And I was able to write 48 hours in pieces for them because I set up my contract like that because I really wanted to write them. I think they're fun. I think they're useful. And the thing is, I realized afterwards, because I owned the content and I was trying to place some of them other places, that there's really just not that many print 48 hours type things. But there's a lot of ones that have that same ethos but have a slightly different slant. And so Delta, in its destination guide, has something similar to that, the One City, Five Ways. But in the Wheels Up section, they have something that's a second-person version of those sort of short 48 hours things. And so if you have sometimes, and again, we'll talk about this later, if you have a particular format that you're feeling really wedded to about one of your ideas, sometimes just taking it a little sideways into something that's the same idea as in an itinerary piece, but with a different slant, perhaps, you know, writing it one way for foodies, one way for adventurous people, and one way for families, can be a way to finally get that article into print. But if you just tell the editor you want to write a 48 hours piece, they're going to say, we don't have that section. Okay, so Delta has trending, which is a great place for, again, I know somebody has some Taipei pieces that they'd like to pitch, that can go there. There's also another short, which is really great for things that are nature-oriented, and I know we have a couple of these coming up later in the call on the ideas to pitch. So this Delta Breakaway is a good section for those. So this is 500 words, and I think Delta pays $1 a word, but I don't have it in front of me. But this is 500 words, so that's a great rate. a first-person article. Again, so this is a place to do those first-person experiences where you talk about getting out of a city and into nature. Now, keep in mind whenever you're pitching an airline magazine that you're going to need to check that the airline flies to the area that you're talking about. So this would have to be a natural spot that is near a city which is serviced by this airline. So that's the one caveat for those people that I mentioned. If you have an outdoor thing that we're going to talk about later, just double check with any of the airline magazines that it's a fit. But this is a great opportunity for something, if you have something that's not specific enough to fit into a magazine like Canoe and Kayak or something, it's a bit more general of an outdoor sort of walking, hiking activity. Okay, now another thing that I've mentioned on other calls is that we also need to think as travel writers that we're also a bit business writers, because most of the things that we're covering, whether it's a restaurant or a tour company or a food truck or a hotel or a new, you know, Airbnb type service, they're all actually businesses. So we do a lot of business writing without realizing it. Now, this Pop Biz section in Delta Sky is a great opportunity for us to see trends in travel that are bleeding into, you know, the mainstream travel's life and write those up in a really well-paid $1,000 a word essay type format. Also, Delta has quite a few destination guides. Some airlines do more business content or more fashion or lifestyle, but Delta really does a lot of destination stuff. And so, like I said, this One City Five Ways is a great place to do those city profiles that you guys have been asking about. But you have to be careful because, you know, they've been doing One City Five Ways for who knows how many years, I think at least 7. So they've got a pretty deep list of cities that they've already covered. So anytime you want to pitch something to a magazine that is a column that's oriented around a specific city, always, always, always do a quick Google search and check on their website as well. If you need to Google search specifically on a website, you write the domain. So this would be, I think it's deltasky.com, but whatever is the domain of the magazine, in Google you would write deltasky.com and then colon and then Ottawa or whatever it is that you're searching for. And that's how you use Google to search directly on a site. Now, they have one other city-specific destination guide sort of profile, which is called Profile, and it looks into a specific city, and they have 3 different articles that I think are written by different people. And, you know, they're either Q&A, business, travel, or sports. And so in this case, you need to know which cities the magazine is covering in advance. So this is where taking a magazine's editorial calendar and using that to place your pitches can be really, really useful. But anytime you're pitching to a magazine's editorial calendar, keep in mind that A, other writers are, and B, that if something's on the editorial calendar, the editor's probably assigning that well in advance because it's one of the linchpins of their magazine. So if it's a big magazine like Delta Sky and something is on their calendar, you want to be pitching that to them, you know, a year in advance, maybe 8 months in advance would be the shortest window for that. Okay. 2 more. So United also has a lot of stuff that's open to freelancers. And this is actually United Rhapsody, which is their first class publication, not Hemispheres, which is their sort of back of the airplane, as they say, publication. So they also start out with a trend section, except in this area, their trends are very much those sort of business-oriented profiles that we were talking about. But then they also have several types of profiles that are specifically about food. So one is focused on a dish served in flight. So this is the kind of thing that can be a little bit tricky to figure out. But if you just came off of a United flight, probably you weren't flying in the front of the plane, but as you walk out, you can grab the first class menu and use that to dig around and pitch one of these type stories. From the sideboard is a drinks-themed section, and I know that some of you have asked me about drinks, and there's actually quite a lot of cocktails, spirits, wine-oriented sections like this from the sideboard in the higher end luxury publications. We just added Robe Report and a couple of things like that to the database, and almost all of them have at least, if not more than one, spirits oriented section like this. They also have another one, Fine Dining, and this is about a specific restaurant. So this is great when you're on a press trip and you go to a very, very fancy restaurant and you want to cover it, but maybe the experience of the meal was not something atmospheric, like you were just chatting with a lot of the other travel writers, but you want to write something specifically about that restaurant, this Rhapsody would be a great place for that. Okay, likewise, they've got another business profile that's about designers. And then they have 2 more of these essays. One is quite short, and this has an element using the latest cars. So what does that mean? This probably means that they're assigning this day tripper piece out in advance to a writer who's partnered with the car company to have the rental car. But you never know. But this is the kind of thing that if you have an idea, you can pitch them, but it's better to pitch in advance, because anything like this where it looks like they probably have to pair the writer up with something, whether it's one of these spin the globe style stories where the magazine assigns the destination, anytime you see something like that, you want to ask them before you take the trip, before you write the story, generally before. The next journey style piece that they have in Rhapsody is called First Person Far Flung. And again, this is a first person essay and quite long and a multi-page spread, so that would be a great feather in somebody's cap. But this has to be something quote unquote exotic. So, you know, people who went to T-Bex in the Philippines and went out to the islands, this is the kind of thing that would be great for that. Just again, make sure that it's something that's serviced by the airline. Okay, one more, and then we're going to get going. So Be Inspired is actually got some really great sections for writers, and this is Brussels Airlines magazine. So some of their things are quite focused on Europe and, you know, Belgium specifically, such as their first short section, which is a destination guide called Discover Belgium. And this is nice because, you know, how many towns are there in Belgium, right? If you know that you're going to Belgium and perhaps you have a little time on your hand, I'm not saying how many towns are there in Belgium, but I mean, you know, if they're covering different ones every issue and they've been doing this for a while, you can really easily go through, see what they're missing, see a town that's between point A and point B that you're going to, and pitch that to them before you take your trip. So this would be a really great example of the type of thing that you could pitch in advance. And I know some of you have sent me trips you've already been on and some that you're about to go to. Now, Barrio is an, or Barrio, depending on how you're going to say it, is another one of these examples of a great city itinerary type thing. You list bars and restaurants and museums that you can do, but it's not strictly a 48 hours. So again, airline magazines are great places to find these sort of straight destination guides that a lot of you have been asking about. They also have another one called Big City Guide, which is a first-person story, but incorporates a lot of that sort of listicle information, like the restaurants and hotels. They also have, again, a business-oriented sort of profile, but this is more of a profile on an interesting person. And this is another thing. Of course, Be Inspired is the main cabin publication for Brussels Airways, but a lot of the luxury publications are really big on this person profile. I noticed when I was editing the Rogue Report magazine that they have two or three different profiles just on interesting people. So if you're staying, for instance, in a boutique hotel on a press trip where the owner is a really interesting person, maybe they're Italian nobility and they also own a winery, that would be a great sort of thing to highlight that part of your trip by doing the profile of the owner. And then Be Inspired also has another section open for freelancers that's one of these essay type ones. And this is an account of a short road trip. And I know people often ask me about road trips domestically, and the AAA publications are often a great source of that. But this on the road is a great example of something for a European road trip as well. They do cover things on other continents. They've got a Toronto one in here, for instance. But this is a great one to keep in mind if you are in Europe for World Travel Market or ITB and you have some time in between. All right. Oh, I have one more. Sorry. So Sever, I know we looked at this also on the call last week, but this is the kind of thing where they have a lot of really deep, interesting essay-type sections in short format in the front of the book. And so often when people tell me, oh, I want to pitch this meal, or, you know, I ate this food, I have to say what about it. And that's why I'm going to unmute some of you later on the call and get some more information about the type of things you want to pitch. Because, you know, you could have a restaurant and you could pitch it for, I'm going to go back a little bit, you could pitch that to this food profile of worth flying for in Travel and Leisure. You can pitch it for the fine dining that we talked about in Rhapsody, or if it has more of a story, if it has more characters, beginning, middle, end, then you could pitch it for this Eat the World section in Sever. Likewise, Sever also has A Meal to Remember, which is also a short piece, but it's much more atmospheric as opposed to the service, how-to-oriented or trend-oriented nature of its fun of book things. All right, so now we're going to move into just a couple quick reminders about how to tell if you have a topic rather than an article pitch idea. And don't forget, if you have any questions as we're going through, or if you think of any ideas, particularly about the magazines that I just dropped in, put those in the side, and then I'll get to them when we go through and break down ideas later. Okay. Do I have a blog post idea rather than an article idea? This is a big one. Okay, a lot of us now come from blogging in one way, shape, or form. Either we have our own blogs, we got some of our first clips writing for blogs, perhaps we've blogged for companies or for tourism boards. And so when we think of ideas, we think in the types of headlines that attract internet clicks, or that you can write in a more wordy fashion for an online audience. Remember when we were looking at those travel and leisure articles, those are only 200 words long to tell an entire story of a journey or of a meal. So you have to be much, much more concise and make your words and your details pop a lot more in these print articles than you do online. And so what that often means is that we don't have space for 10 tips about something, but for a whole 48 hours about a city. And so this is the kind of thing where, as we go through the ideas, you'll see that I'm often ratcheting things down considerably. And to do that, you really need more details. So a couple of you, I already sent multiple emails to get some more information about what you sent me. And so we'll talk about that process of what you can go through in more detail when we get to those. All right. Does this idea have an attention-grabbing hook that makes people want to know more, even if they're not already interested in the topic? This is a question that I love, is you might have an idea that you're so in love with, and you explain it to somebody else, and you just kind of get a blank stare back, and that's not going to go over well with an editor, because even if they personally like your idea, that doesn't matter. It matters if they think your readers are going to like the idea, their readers are going to like the idea. So this is the kind of thing where I often see people write a pitch, and it seems interesting in an academic sort of way, but the so what is lacking. The why does this have to go out to a certain magazine's readers now is not being clearly elucidated for the editor. But if I ask you questions, then it'll come up, so you know it. But you need to train yourself to get to that so what a bit faster without someone else's intervention, because otherwise, you know, not every editor is going to write you back and say, so what? Some of them will, but they're typically for the lower paying publications. Okay, is this a, oops, sorry, that's a typo there, but is this a regional or national story for the sake of pitching? Now, this is the kind of thing that I saw several of you say, I've pitched this story a bunch to all of my local magazines, or I pitch it to the local AAA and to one airline magazine. And that's great if you're starting to look into airline magazines, but I really encourage you all to pitch first to the national or international level, because A, those publications pay more, but B, you don't want to get, you know, have a situation where you've pitched out an idea and the regional magazine gets back to you sooner and then the national magazine wants it later, but now you've sold it for less money to a less prestigious magazine. So you always need to think if there is a way on a national or international level to place your story before you sell it to a, I don't want to say lesser, but to, you know, a lower prestige magazine. Okay, and then I know that we're going to bring this up with a pitch that somebody put in there, but is there something timely about this idea? This can go different ways. Sometimes it's timely because it only happens once a year, and that's what's up with the pitch that we're going to look at later, but that can be a little tricky. So if it happens once a year, and you've already been or you're about to go, how do you pitch that, right? Like, the editor's not going to run it after it's just happened, probably, right? Are they going to run it right before it happens the next time? But then when do people plan their trips? So this depends on what type of magazine it is, because you'll often see, you know, right now it's cold, but people are writing about places to go in the summer because this is when people are starting to buy their plane tickets. So you need to start thinking like an editor to figure out the timeline and the hook for your articles as well, because that's what takes some of these articles that seem a bit general and seem a bit so what, and adds that level of, oh, okay, you're right, yeah, this is interesting to my readers. Okay, now we talk about baskets of kittens a lot. So baskets of kittens are when you have one topic, or sorry, one, you know, hotel, one activity, one restaurant, one type of food, and it's quite interesting, but it's a little obscure. So remember before when I was talking about you can take something obscure and you can write it as a first-person essay that creates an atmospheric experience that offers that armchair travel. But if you have something that it's a bit obscure and you need to write it as more of a service, how to do this element, you know, that wouldn't fit in travel and leisure service section. They look for things that are international and highly applicable. Okay, so if you have something super obscure, sometimes you need to turn it into a basket of kittens, which is a collection of things that are all wonderful and unique, and how can you say no to a basket of kittens? But the question then becomes, how do we pitch these roundups without falling into the blog post listicle format? Okay, and that is the key difference with a lot of the things that you guys sent me that have more of a, you know, a weekend in or a seven things in format is that we need to center on what makes them unique and not just rely on the number of activities. All right? Okay. So now we are going to get into breaking down some ideas. Deirdre sent me quite a few different things, and I've put them all in here over two slides so that we can start to work through them together as I handle this technical problem in the background. So, oops, I'm going to go back. So the first thing that she said was epic bucket list trips. I love this idea, and I like that she mentioned, should we do it as a roundup? Because the thing is that, of course, you know, like I said, roundups are great, and editors love them, but only if it's not for the sake of a roundup. So if she has actually gone to the China's Great Wall, Machu Picchu, the South of France, Easter Island, Bora Bora, you know, you can take this batch of epic bucket list trips and you can do a couple different things. So she can write it as, you know, are they all worth going to? And she can write it as more of a feature where she uses scenes from different trips to perhaps show and compare and contrast and say at the end of it all, which one was the one that she most enjoyed. She can also take this for, one of the things I wanted to suggest for this was honeymoon magazines are great, great sources of all of these type of things where you're using a once-in-a-lifetime trip. Because anytime we want to do something really grandiose and over the top like this, we have to think, who is actually taking these trips? You know, your average person is probably going to take them, like we said, once in a lifetime, but who are the people that are taking them more? They're either, you know, people who spend a lot of money on travel, so then we're looking at the luxury markets, or they're people who are taking their once-in-a-lifetime trip, and that's often honeymooners. Okay, so in this case, what I would love to do is to have Deirdre take a couple of these that seem really, you know, particularly one of a kind. So Easter Island, super hard to get to. Bora Bora, super hard to get to. China's Great Wall, it's not as hard to get to, but I think it does have that bucket list appeal. Machu Picchu, and then maybe one more. And put those together and take it to, like I said, a honeymoon editor. And then perhaps also what might be great is there's a couple publications that are specifically for retirees. International Living is not explicitly for retirees, but it does often end up having that slant. And there's also Where to Retire, and they technically don't accept submissions, so you can't pitch them, but I think you can write them and sort of, you know, ask if they have an opening for that sort of thing. And I think they would really buy into something like this as a feature. Another great place for something like this as a feature, comparing and contrasting, like I said, through scenes from different trips, would be the AARP magazine, runs a lot of great travel content, and you could also potentially look at one of the bigger AAA magazines, like AAA Via. Okay. Now, oldest restaurants around the globe, and you know, until I get this, Deirdre, go ahead and type in the side here to chime in on what I'm saying. Okay, so oldest restaurants in the globe. This is another neat one that's quite specific that I wanted to share with you because, again, it's one of these roundups that's a little tough because, well, it does have a cool component to it. The question is, what makes it interesting for a magazine, right? So in this case, she says, we've visited some of the oldest restaurants in the world and have yet to write up the experience, but she has great notes. So you'd have to see what makes, obviously they're unique because they're the oldest restaurants in the world, but what unifies them? Are they restaurants that are all run by single families for multiple decades? That's specific and unique enough that I think you can run with that. Are they all restaurants that have been open since the 1500s? Are they all restaurants that have been open since before the countries were founded? You know, so in the case of a lot of the European countries, you have the advantage that a lot of them, you know, only actually date back to the 1800s, or, you know, the current country dates back to World War II, so that's not quite so hard. In America, that's a little bit trickier. But there, for this to work as a roundup, you really need to turn it into something that's a little bit more tuned into something more specific than just the oldest restaurants, that unites each thing. So then you really have a basket of kittens. Okay. So the culinary capital, Lyon, in France. This is another one that I love because I've actually been here, so I know quite a bit about this. But I'm hopefully just about to get this unmuted so I can get her to jump in on this. So let's skip forward from that one for a second. Now, the recent cruise. So she said we did a fabulous river cruise from Budapest to Vilshofen, Germany, up to Prague. I'm totally butchered that, I'm sure. It was great, but we have not written about it yet, even though I interviewed the chef on board. So for something like this, I really like, you know, that she has the culinary angle that she's mentioned, but we would need to dig in. Is this, you could do a profile with the chef if he's a big chef in one of these magazines, like I talked about before, how it was Rhapsody, I believe. Yes, so in Rhapsody, we've got this fine dining that talks about a specific restaurant, right? But this one works so much with the restaurant. But they do have an interview with a chef and a dish behind it. So perhaps for this tasting notes in Rhapsody, if on the cruise Deirdre had sampled a particular specialty from that region that was prepared by the chef on board, she could talk about how, you know, not only here's the history of this dish, which is very specific to the region, but also it's something that you can have as a traveler in these different places, and she can mention the cruise. With the river cruise, though, I think that we run into a small issue, which is that river cruises, you know, they had a big moment a little while ago where everybody was doing them and everybody was writing them. So if you want to write about something that was a trend but isn't a trend right now, you run into this issue of how do you keep editors from being fatigued? And I talked about this on the call last week, where I was talking about truffles and how I had gone to this great place where you could eat truffles for much, much less than you do in most parts of Italy, to the point where, you know, you'll go to the restaurant and they just shave truffle on your pasta to the point where you say stop because you're worried about how much it costs. And I pitched it to an editor who I thought would totally love it. And she was like, oh, I just covered truffles recently. And I was like, no, no, but these truffles are different. And to her, it didn't matter because she had just covered truffles. So that was really all that mattered for her. And so if you're going to write about something like river cruises, you have to see how to make this different. So in this case, I think, Deirdre, that your river cruise needs to be something more specific about the places that you visited or the stories that you found there. And so in this case, I would invite you to dig in further into the types of things that you experienced on your cruise, and then also to write, to think about what are the first person stories. So what was the amazing meal that you had, or what was the experience of sitting on the deck of the river cruise ship? And then you should look both at publications like Porthole Cruise, which specifically focuses on cruises of all types, river cruises and otherwise, and see which sections they have that best fit those experiences that you came up with. Okay, I think I have this muting thing sorted, that I have a way to hear you. So I'm going to unmute you again, Deirdre, and hopefully we can talk about Lyon. All right. Deirdre, go ahead and talk if you can. Is she there? No, I don't hear her. I do have her unmuted. Okay, we'll try this again with Jill in another couple moments. Okay, so another one that Deirdre suggested that I really love but that's hard to place is following travel writing author Peter Mail. So if you guys haven't read his work, he wrote several books about living in the south of France that are really sort of the fundamental, not just travel literature, but this sort of modern 1900s expatriate movement. And she took a trip where she went around and looked at all the spots in a movie version of it that they're going to be coming up with. And this I have thought about with Game of Thrones oriented things so many times. Anytime you have location information related to a movie or a TV show or anything like that, this is hot. This is great, great stuff. And because it's so timely, it's great to try to do that for newspapers. So that's the kind of thing that I would highly suggest taking to the Independent, because it's Europe, you want to go to maybe the British publications, or to an English language publication in Paris. I think there's an English language newspaper there. And I know she mentioned France today. And the issue, like I said, with taking things that are really regional and doing them, or taking things that happen in a specific region and restricting yourself to that region, is that often those are lower paying publications. And you could, in fact, take that same thing to a national level and get much better pay and a more interesting story out of it. So this is the kind of thing that also would be great for an airline magazine that flies to those places. And in this case, since she's already gone, I think she had sent another email, she can write that either as a narrative or as a short front of book sort of piece in the trend news section like we looked at. Okay, I think Deirdre's back, so I'm going to try to unmute her one more time. Deirdre, are you there? No, I'm so sorry, guys. This isn't working. Okay, I'm going to try it again with Jill, and hopefully that will work. All right, so another idea that Deirdre had was the Central Coast of California. And I know that this was a travel writing conference, and so there's probably a lot of other people there. And so it's important to make sure anytime you're going like to something like that, that you're getting slightly different angles for than other people are. And so Deirdre's proposed a multi-generational all-ages trip and what to do in each spot. And this is the kind of thing, like I said, that's a bit roundup-y, and so you have to find a way to fit that to a magazine that has that specific type of setup. And so in this case, you could write this as a narrative, but you could also take something like I was saying, Delta has the One City Five Ways. There's a couple more examples of that, especially in airline magazines. But I think Delta would be a great candidate for this. And you're going to look at it not just as the multi-generational, but also as couples, also as independent travelers, also as foodies. All right. Let's head over to Jill. And Jill, I'm going to try and unmute you. So give us a shout if you're there.
Hello.
Jill, can you hear us? Oh, hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Great. Okay.
It works.
So I'm glad this worked with somebody. Okay, so Jill, thanks so much for joining us. And I'm trying to hold my phone and also talk into the microphone for the webinar. So if anybody has trouble hearing me or hears feedback, let me know. Okay, so Jill, thanks for joining us. Okay. So let's talk about this Best Burgers on the Beach. So you said that you've pitched it to AAA Texas. Is this something that you've already written about in advance?
Yeah, I wrote it for a travel writing workshop back in November.
And so is this written in a narrative format or more of a roundup where you're highlighting different places?
The Burgers on the Beach is more like a narrative. It's fairly short. I describe the place and the people that hang out there and the food.
So it's more of an atmosphere piece. Great. So I think this would be a prime candidate for one of these dish worth traveling for style pieces that I highlighted early in the call. But another thing, I'm wondering how long was the version of this that you've written already?
If I remember right, it's probably around 300 words, somewhere in there.
Okay. That seems like a good length. So what I would recommend is to take that and to plug it back into some of these places that I mentioned earlier in the call that are like a dish worth traveling for an airline magazine, or for a food magazine like Savour. But the second thing is to make sure that you have a time peg. So perhaps Jetty Shack has an anniversary coming up of some type, or you know they might be adding some renovation or something like that. Often with places that are a bit historic, if they're adding a new menu item, that's a good time peg. So circle back with them and you know, go to their PR person and ask her to do her job, which is you know helping you to get published, and dig up something that's timely. So that's what I would recommend. for the programs.
They don't have anything like that. It's just a little dive bar.
Often those dive bars right now, they're really having a moment. So don't think that just because it's a small sort of roadside place, that means it's not worth writing about.
No, I mean, they don't have a PR person or anything like that.
Their owner then does their PR. I interact with a lot of places like that where it's the owner that does most of it, but maybe, you know, it's a sibling who technically does the media relations, or they might have someone else local that they work with as well. But just circle back with somebody from the place itself, because they're going to have that knowledge of what's coming down the pipeline that you don't have. Okay, so this next one, you had 10 ways to spend the day in Surfside, Texas. So again, this runs into what we talked about before, where you've got some different fun things to do, and when you write it with the headline, like 10 ways to spend the day in Surfside, Texas, this is more of a blog post. So we need to put it back into the format of some of the publications. So you said you pitched this to AAA Texas, right, and All Local as above. So have you tried to take this to anything more national?
No, I haven't. It's really concentrating a lot on the history of the area, too, because this is where this Texas actually started right there. So the headline was actually right in the start of Texas, kind of going off that song right in the heart of Texas and that sort of thing. It's basically a listicle.
Okay, great. And so that makes me think that there's got to be some anniversaries. Anything that's really historic, you can find, if not, you know, the actual straight anniversary of when the town was founded, you can find the anniversary of a specific event, you can find the anniversary of a battle, you can find the anniversary when, you know, the fort was established or something like that. So what I would do is I would pour through a little bit of either the history that's in your notes, or maybe it sounds like you've already written the piece, some of the facts that you have in there, and trying to find something that in 2017 is going to hit a 0 or a 5 anniversary. And then check in with, I have a secret sort of thing that I use for airline magazines. So if you're writing about a place and you're not sure what airline magazine it would fit for, you look at the local airport and you look on the airport's website and you see all of the airlines that fly there. And then you go back to what we were doing before with the United magazine, and obviously Brussels Airways wouldn't be a fit here, but Delta with magazines like that. And you find the sections that we talked about that are city guides, but that might not exactly fit this 10 ways to spend the day format, but they have a slightly different breakdown for how they do their city guides. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, we don't have an airport.
Go ahead.
Houston is the closest city to us with an airport. So.
And how far away is it?
It's about an hour's drive.
Okay, that's not bad. There might also be, I find sometimes, a surprising number of regional or private plane airports and things like that when you really dig into it. So Houston an hour away isn't bad, and that's going to hit a lot of airline magazines. But you might also find something else nearby that would surprise you, especially for the private pilot airports. Okay. Now this Bira one, where is Bira exactly?
Bira is in Indonesia. It is on the island of Sulawesi, which is north of Bali, about an hour and a half plane ride from Bali north.
And so you've pitched it to International Living. Have you heard anything from them at all?
Basically, just they said that's not really their style.
Okay. And so you said fairly long article. So is this something you wrote already?
Yeah.
Okay, and so you say about how off the beaten path it is, how to get there, and what you'll find when you'll get there. So my question here is kind of, what's the point? Why go to Bira? What makes it different from other places that are also off the beaten path?
Well, the point I was writing about and the reason that I personally went there was to meet some of their master boat builders and see how they built their old traditional sailing schooners and look into buying one. So that was the reason for going all the way out there, out of so far.
Okay, that's excellent. And that totally changes the type of places that we would pitch this story. So Cruising World has a really great first-person essay. And in fact, we just added a couple other things, like Saltwater Sportsman, which I think is powerboats, but a couple other boating magazines. And what I notice is that the sailing and boat magazines tend to be really heavy on the first-person story. So for those places, this sort of buying trip like you did, and it sounds like you also evaluated the boating opportunities of the island, I imagine, when you were there, would be perfect. So take this instead over to Cruising World would be, and publications like that would be my first suggestion. And the second is, like I mentioned earlier in the call, Robe Report and a lot of these luxury publications have a lot of profiles of builders and artisans and people who have, you know, been making a specific handcrafted item for a very long time. And so that would be the next stop for something like this. And you can write both of those articles at the same time. So if you get something placed with a cruising and sailing publication, you can still do a profile of these builders for somewhere else. Those two articles wouldn't be conflicting at all. Okay, so thanks so much for joining us, Jill. And I don't want to spend too long with you because I want to get to some other ones, but I'm also going to respond to your email about these other ones after the call. So thank you so much.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, okay. Jill should be muted again, so I'm going to put my phone down for a little bit. And let's see who is in here next. I think Tanya, let me see if she's on the call. She might not have been able to make it. So, actually, I think Tanya's slide is somewhere else. One second. All right. So I'm just going to go for a second through Tanya's slides. I know she's going to watch the call later. And there's a lot of things in here that I wanted to show you guys. So Tanya was one of these folks, like Deirdre, that she sent me some ideas, and then I circled back again with her to get some more context. Because the first list that she sent me had a lot of these ones that are a little tough. So she had the 48 hours in Taipei, that came from her, and a luxury weekend in Taipei. And like I said, those are both really general, but with the right magazine setup, and I highlighted a couple of those earlier in the call, you can find a home for them, but you need to tweak them a little bit. So it's not going to be exactly 45 hours, and it might not be just a luxury weekend in Taipei. It might be how to do Taipei as a splurge and how to do Taipei on a budget. And for instance, I know Destination I Do has a column that does exactly that. Now, she had this other one that I loved, which is a cycling weekend in Japan along the world's largest collection of suspension bridges. Now, this is one of these articles that you can do multiple different ways for different magazines. So you can get a great feature out of this by taking it to a cycling magazine. And in fact, I just found this really great new indie publication called Bunyan Velo. It's B-U-N-Y-A-N space V-E-L-O. And it's just stunning photography, but really interesting, you know, person-related stories about bicycling. And another called Ride Journal, which is a 200-page long on also indie cycling-related magazine. So there's some really nice places for the narrative-type features. But then you can also take this cycling weekend in Japan and turn it into something short for the airline magazine I mentioned earlier. I believe it was Delta, that has the outdoor, you know, getting outside of a city and doing something nature-oriented. The same thing can also work for this next one she suggested, which is whitewater rafting in Japan. But I also was just putting up the entry for Canoe and Kayak, and they also have a great feature for a kayak activity in an unknown sort of off the beaten path destination. But like I said, this is the kind of thing where you want to be careful, because you can definitely sell this as a feature more easily if you're a newer writer to something like Canoe and Kayak than you can to a national magazine. But if you end up pitching this as a short piece to Canoe and Kayak, but you could have gotten it into Delta's outdoor section, that's where you run into problems. So anytime you have something super specific like this white water rafting or the cycling weekend, always start, even if it's just the shorter versions, start shopping those around to the national magazines. And I know another thing that would be great for this is Action Asia has several different sections where both of these would be a great fit, Tanya, so keep that in mind for later. Now, she had this other one that I thought was really, actually, these other two that I wanted to get through quickly with you guys. So one was a guide to the Indian Ocean islands. Which one is the best fit for you? And this is the kind of thing that travel agents get a lot. And this is a great idea in that, you know, as soon as you think this is the kind of question that a travel agent must get a lot, or this is the kind of question that I, being a sort of destination expert from travel writing about that area, get a lot from my friends who are going there, so you're sort of functioning as the travel agent in that section, That means it's something that maybe you should be pitching to a travel agent magazine. And there is, in fact, a magazine called Travel Agent Magazine. And there's a lot of travel trade magazines similar to that, where there's travel agents that, you know, either have these issues, or perhaps most experienced travel agents might know that, but a lot of the newer travel agents reading the magazine would not. And so Travel Agent Magazine is one. There's another one called Luxury Travel Advisor. And there's a lot of group travel magazines as well, but that's something I would definitely take to Travel Agent Magazine. And then you can also look at it from the consumer side, of course, right? So A Guide to the Indian Ocean Islands. I know that Jill just said earlier that International Living said about her island piece it wasn't really quite the right thing for them. But that, I think, was probably because of the sailing and the buying angle. But I know with International Living, which is a magazine for people who are looking to settle in other countries, this might be a great concept for them because it's got the basket of kittens. You don't have just one island, you have quite a few. Now, another thing that I mentioned earlier in the call that this would be a good fit for is the honeymoon market, right? If we go back to Deirdre's bucket list trips idea, this is very similar. You know, if you're going to take one trip, because you're probably not going to take that many in your lifetime, to one of these islands, which one do you want to go to? How do you figure out which one is the right one for you? So that would be a great fit for a destination writing magazine as well. And Destination I Do has a front of book section that I think that would be perfect for. Now, the next one that she mentioned, I think, is the kind of thing that we all get into a lot. How to visit a place that we know really well, like a local, and avoid the overpriced tourist traps. Now, that, I have to say, can be a service piece, but you have to get it to the right place. So remember, we looked before at how Travel and Leisure has this service section, and it has to be quite general. So this would be the kind of thing that you, knowing London, could pitch to Travel and Leisure about how to visit major cities and avoid overpriced tourist traps, and use your personal experience as being a Londoner as the peg, as the background experience that qualifies you to write that piece, but then mention other people that you're going to interview in other major cities who are going to offer their input to make the story filled out to also include New York and Hong Kong and cities like that. And now you've essentially turned it into a basket of kittens, but still kept it within that service framework and made it something you can place in a national magazine. Now, as a local story, you could pitch this to something like Time Out London. It might be something they've done before. So this might be something that you can take to an airline magazine that's European-focused, like The Inspired that we looked at before. All right, now I'm going to move along quickly. I think I have to go back one slide, actually two slides. All right, so Donna, so now we're getting to the part where people have sent me quite specific ideas, and I want to talk about all the different places and all the different ways that we can spin these ideas, even once they become quite specific. So Donna had gone on this Puerto Vallarta press trip, and I thought this was really interesting because at TBEX a couple years ago, there was a big hullabaloo about swimming with dolphins and how it's not eco-friendly. And in the last call, I used a trip that I had taken where we had the opportunity to swim with tuna, which again can be a potential issue from the standpoint of conservation and responsibility. And so I think Donna's on the call, so I'm going to try to unmute her quickly. Donna, are you with us? Okay, looks like not. Donna, raise your hand and go to webinar if you're able to come back later. Okay, so with this piece, because it's got the, oh, there she is. Let me try one more time. Donna, are you there? Can anyone else hear her?
Hello?
Oh, Donna, I hear you.
I had to change a setting on my computer.
Oh, okay, great. Oh, no, well, now we know. Maybe that was the problem we were having with Deirdre. Okay, well, email me later and let me know what you did so that I'll know for next time.
Okay,
so Donna, I know you had sent me two ideas, but I want to focus on this dolphin one. Now, the tour, you said you didn't see any dolphins, right? But do you feel like you had enough of an experience in that sort of, not chase, but going around trying to find the dolphins that you could write a narrative about it?
It's really kind of iffy. We saw them, the dolphins, in a distance, and every time we jumped in the water to go swim with them, they disappeared.
Uh-huh.
So I was kind of thinking of going on the lines of highlighting the company,
mm-hmm.
or not writing about it at all.
Yeah, You know, and that's a tough one because sometimes we go on trips and what's supposed to happen doesn't happen for some reason or another. And then we say, is this something worth writing about? But I think you might be missing an opportunity here because I really like the idea that a lot of people, a lot of tourists might go on this trip and not see dolphins. And every time I go somewhere and something doesn't work out the way that it's supposed to, I have to think about, is this an experience that a lot of people might have? And should I write this as a more service-oriented, or do you want to do this piece? So I think that you can take this a couple different places. And did you say that you had already pitched this?
No, I have not.
Okay. So because it's Puerto Vallarta, I'm not sure if it would quite fit Sierra. I think they're North America, but they might be only the United States. But I think this is a really prime candidate for an interesting feature where you can work in your personal experience as well as some interviews and some information about the program, but sort of keep it grounded in your experience as the narrative movement mechanism for a Sierra piece. And they pay really well, and they're a great clip, and I've heard that they will work with people who have a solid idea that they haven't worked with in the past for features, which isn't always that common with publications of that stature. So I would look into what they've done in the past that has this same sort of first-person conservation, should you do this or not, and see what other past features they have that fit that mold, and sort of almost copy that structure and pitch them something similar with this idea.
Okay.
And in terms of covering the company, is the company older? Is there some sort of time peg that we have with this? Like, do they have, is the program new, or is there an anniversary?
The company, it's a group of biologists, and they have been in Puerto Vallarta studying the dolphins for several years. I'm not exactly sure how many years that is, but with them starting people actually to swim with the dolphins, I think it's relatively new within the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're collecting the information and kind of cataloging the dolphins, and they've seen young dolphins that have grown up. So this must, it must be a lot longer than I'm thinking. But they've seen young dolphins grow up and then have their babies, and they bring their babies to the biologists.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting to see a family line of dolphins return.
Okay. I think if that's the case, then there should be some time peg that you can dig around and find, whether it's an anniversary or maybe, you know, that it's just recently that those dolphins have started bringing back their babies or something like that. And so anytime you want to hit something national, international, like an airline magazine or a travel and leisure, you need to have that time peg element to sort of get past the gatekeeper mode of the editor. But I think once you find that, you can pitch this for one of those trend sections that I highlighted in the major airline magazines or travel and leisure, because it, this whole concept, both the way you're talking about using the humans as the lab rats, also the dolphins that have, you know, themselves decided to come back and participate in the experience, is fascinating. And I think that it would be unfortunate to limit yourself too much to the science idea like you were talking about. Not that we don't need to cover that, but I think in order to get this into the bigger travel publications, you need to focus on the what's in it for me of the traveler. And so on the one hand, that's the interesting part. But we need to interplay that science with the traveler's experience. So I think if you can focus on, you know, how the traveler can experience it and what it's like as a short, you know, 200, 300 word, whether it's atmospheric or just more informational, this would be a great front of book trend news sort of piece for one of those bigger magazines.
Okay.
And then from the profile angle, I just loaded a bunch of outdoor-oriented magazines into the database, a bunch of which are indies that are more into this education element. And so I would look for that side of it at Sidetracked and Another Escape, which are both sort of all-feature publications. So they don't have short formats. You can write the article as long as is the right fit. And they have a lot of their content available online. So check out the type of things they've published in the past and figure out what's the right balance of personal versus educational for that publication as opposed to Sierra, like we talked about before. And then I would pitch this to those two places as well.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you. I think that we have another one of your slides. Let me see if it's the next one. The tequila one is yours as well, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to start pulling ones out, and then I was having trouble with the webinar. So this is one of these ones that can fall into a lot of those drink sections. So I talked about these earlier in the call, and I know we highlighted that United Rhapsody has a good one for these. And also Robe Report has one as well. And I would also, I know you mentioned Imbibe. I would look also at Decanter, and Wine Enthusiast also has a spirit section. And then from there, like I mentioned, a lot of the first class titles of the airline magazines, we looked at Rhapsody and we looked at the specific section for that as well. But Inc. Global is the publisher of a lot of the airline magazines. And they have Privat Air, which is for, you know, privately owned planes that go out of these regional airports that I was talking about before with Jill, and Air Club, and a couple other publications, which are all available in their entirety online. And I would say they have at least five or six of those. So look through there and check what the requirements of their specific drink sections are. But I think that you could definitely take sort of this background story. And also, I wanted to ask you, was there a particular distributor? Are you able to get it in the U.S.? What is the potential for someone to experience this at home as opposed to just in Mexico?
There is, Ricea is available limited amounts in the U.S., and it's normally the unflavored version.
Okay.
And the particular Ricea that I experienced and I saw the distillation process is not available in the U.S. It's only available in Puerto Vallarta, and it's made pretty much exclusively in Puerto Vallarta.
Okay. So that's useful because what I found is that on some of these, you run into that line before, like I was talking about the service versus armchair traveler. And so if you can get it, even if it's not exactly the same version in the U.S., that's very helpful. And one other place that you might think about taking this, but I'm not sure if they would use it because it's a drink, but is Afar's Feast Column, I think would be a really good fit for this as well.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you, Donna. I'm going to mute you again now, but thanks so much for joining and figuring out how to get on the call.
No problem.
All right. Okay, we went through Tanya's already. Now, oh, I've forgotten who gave us the manatees. If this person who sent in the manatee story is on the call, just mention it in the question box, and I will unmute you. But somebody sent me this idea about the Florida manatees, and I like this because it's got this natural angle like we were talking about, and again, we have that on the next slide that I'm going to get to as well. And it's, but she's included several different ways that we can look at this manatee story. So with the manatees, you can do a very natural experience. You can kayak with them, you can snorkel with them like we were talking about with the dolphins, but then you can also do a more group sort of family softcore adventure experience of visiting them in the wildlife center. And so this gives you a lot of different options. So I would look, again, one of the first places that I would try to take this is like we just talked about with Donna, is to see what are the time pegs here. Because if we can get some sort of time peg, you know, even if that's a seasonal time peg, then we can take that to, okay, now is the time during your trip to Tampa that you want to go see the manatees because they're mating or because they're extra friendly or something like that. And that's the kind of thing that's perfect for an airline magazine because it's here's an activity to add into your trip. And we've got just enough of a time peg that an editor can bite on that. But the other thing is because we've got this kayaking experience, this is the kind of thing, like I said, that would make a great feature for canoe and kayak or for, again, the Delta Skies taking an outdoor section. For the Wildlife Center and the more softcore ways to experience, this is the kind of thing where you can do a basket of kittens. So, you know, you can visit the manatees in Florida. Where else can you visit the manatees? And this is the kind of thing that we can take to a magazine that has a roundup of family-oriented stuff. I know Every Day with Rachel Ray, they have two travel sections, and she's always looking for baskets of kittens. She's actually the originator of the baskets of kittens moniker, and she's always looking for ones that are family-friendly. All right, I've got a couple questions in the chat box, but let me try to get through these, and then we'll get over there. Now, I know that this is very, very long, and we're not going to be able to read through it right here, but this is a really fascinating full pitch that I got from Alicia. Now, this is a place in the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts where they have a forestry company that actually conserves the trees through, I'm going to probably get it wrong, but I think it's called silviculture, which is using all sorts of different ways, whether it's, you know, for maple sugar or for treetop adventures, to protect the trees while monetizing them at the same time, in a similar way that a lot of safari parks have done in Africa. Now, this is the kind of thing that, because it has that really strong business element, you can do a profile of the owner. You can do a success story of, you know, the travails of how they got to where they are for a business magazine or for a conservation magazine. But I think, like we said before about Sierra, she said she would love to put this in Sierra magazine. I think this is the kind of thing where it would work best if you intersperse in the feature narrative a mix of your personal experiences with the history, with the interviews and things like that. So to place this as a feature in the Sierra magazine, Alicia, you're going to have to go and look at the layout and the structure of some of the stories that are similar to this that they've done in the past. But I would really recommend, you know, there's several great regional magazines in the Berkshires, of course, but we've talked about how you want to try to go national before you go regional. So this would be the kind of thing where you could look to some of the other magazines that I mentioned for Donna, like Another Escape or Sidetracked, and get a really great long-form piece in there. But you can also go, not necessarily so regional that you're going to Berkshire's magazines, but to the Boston magazine or to, you know, Yankee magazine. This might be a good fit for them. And then you can also take this to, in a feature profile-oriented way, the types of things we were looking at before, like where Rhapsody has the 1,000-word profile and things like that. So this is the kind of thing that I would love to see as a big, juicy feature, but that might take a little while to get that nailed down. So in the meantime, we need to look at some other shorter ways, perhaps in large national magazines, that we can cut this up. All right, I've got one more, and then I'm going to get into the questions. Okay, so Superbloom. So I think this was from Kathleen, who also is going to be watching this in the replay, but she had a really great question. So this was something that I've mentioned earlier. She went to something that happens once a year, and if you guys haven't heard of the Superbloom, it's when all of Death Valley is carpeted with flowers, and she's got great photos about it, but she's wondering, when do I pitch this? Because it happens once a year, but do I pitch it right after? Do I pitch it right before? And I think you can never pitch too early. This is my big thing. So if you are about to go on a trip and you're confident enough you're going to get the story, pitch it as soon as you know. If you've just gotten back from a trip and you think it's fantastic, pitch it as soon as you've gotten back. Leave it to the editor to decide what is too early for her, because she'll always say, check back with me in 3 months. Or she might just say, you know, I'm putting together my features for 2018 and I'd like to include this. So it's really, really never too early to pitch something timely. I had a piece on tea in Boston that I was trying to time to the Boston Tea Party, and I think I pitched it a year and a half in advance, and I still was too late. So the thing with something timely that happens every year is to look and see, is there something extra timely? Is there a festival around it? Is there an anniversary? Is there something else I can add on it to make it so that the editor needs to publish it this coming year rather than 2 or 3 years from now? This is the same, she says she has something from with Mardi Gras. If it's something not so specific, like Mardi Gras, as in it happens in a lot of places but once a year, this is where you have to really niche it down and say, what is specific about this one place, is one thing that I'm going to? Being timely is one way you can do it, but this is also a thing where you can run into profiles. So for instance, if you're going to New Orleans for Mardi Gras, then I would recommend trying to get yourself inside, get the inside scoop with some of the people who build the floats, or with some of the people who, you know, run the different groups that run the parades. Get the inside experience. And last week I talked about how I had gone to a festival in Japan, which happens once every 7 years, and how I was able to ride on top of the tree trunk that they were pulling down the mountain. Those are the kind of things that make really, really great atmosphere stories. And you can help yourself in advance to get them by setting up contacts on the ground, but some of them also just happen serendipitously. All right, I made it through everything, so thank you guys so much. We went a little bit over time, and I really appreciate you staying, And I have a couple questions that I'm just going to answer here quickly, but if you have to go, I really appreciate you guys staying so long. And again, the replay will be going out in the email, if not later today, then tomorrow. And I really appreciate you all joining us and hope that you have a really, really great holiday weekend as well. Okay, now let me jump into the questions. Is there a basic standard list of questions that you use when you interview a chef or other business operator? This is a great question, and thank you so much for asking this, because I was just doing what I did not realize was an interview today. I was sort of filling out a question sheet that I thought was someone else's reporting that they were going to then write up into an article, only to find out that I had just written their blog post for them by answering these questions. And the questions were not awesome. They were redundant, and if I was doing that interview live, then the person would have been able to ask follow-up questions and dig in and find some other great information. But instead, I was sitting there left having to do that work for them. So I don't usually recommend people have standard questions, as in, I don't recommend that you sit there and write 10 questions before your interview to ask the person. What I recommend is do two things. Have some basic jumpstart questions, and don't have more than 5 of them, because what will happen is that if you have too many questions that you want to get through and you stick to those instead of asking follow-ups, then you can run out of your time. But have a couple basic ones. And I usually like to do things like, what's the real story of how you started doing whatever it is you're doing? Or I always ask at the end, like, what are some new things coming up that we should know about? And then one standard question that I always use, and this is the question that you use to often get the best quotes, is there anything else that I didn't ask you about today that our readers should know about? And what often happens is that this forces people to sort of dig around about what's their best advice or their most important thing. When I'm using this for meeting planning magazines, I say, is there something that you'd like our audience of meeting planners to know that can really help them out in their work? There's different variations of this question, but it's essentially meant to be hyper open-ended so they come up with their best quote. Now, besides that, what I would say is do your research in advance so that when you're chatting with the person, you can have an intelligent conversation, because really that's what the best interviews are. If you're sticking to your questions too heavily, then you can miss out on getting that fresh, off-the-cuff information that you didn't know existed, which is the whole point of doing the interview in the first place, because if you could find everything you needed online, then you wouldn't need to talk to the person. And don't forget that you can always, always circle back with the person, or if, in the case of a chef, with their PR person, and get any extra little fact points answered or checked on later as well. Okay, was it worth going anyway? This is in response to the dolphins pitch. Was it worth going anyway, even if you didn't get to swim with the dolphins? If so, why? Write about that and the fact that the dolphins are still wild and so not going to show up every time. And again, this is a great point with Donna's story. I really think that any time that you, as the travel writer, especially if it's organized by PR people or a tour company that are trying to impress you, anytime you don't have the advertised, promised experience, that can definitely still be worth writing, but you just have to find the right outlet. Because if it's a place that a lot of people are going, it's an activity that a lot of people will be trying to do. You know, for instance, Mardi Gras can be totally packed. What happens if you can't get a spot on Bourbon Street? What do you do? So these are the kind of things that can be really, really great service articles, you know, and that's the kind of thing, particularly like what I just said about Bourbon Street, that would go in Time Out New Orleans right around Mardi Gras. You know, if it's the Olympics, I remember during the London Olympics, they had some great articles on, if you're in London and you don't have tickets for the Olympics, here's 8 places that have set up Jumbotron TV screens where you can hang out with other people in the park and watch the Olympics. So those can be really, really great service pieces, but they're better for local publications. All right, what are some great places to pitch photo essays? This, I have just noticed a couple recently, but I would say that photo essays are sort of having a bit of a renaissance. Photo essays are the kind of things that belong to Time and New Yorker, and I want to say sort of this bygone area of lots of pages in the magazine. While a lot of magazines use a lot of photos now, I wouldn't say that they're doing strictly photo essays. So there's some good places online for photo essays, but it really depends on if the photo essay is very human interest driven or if it's just about a travel destination. If it's just sort of about the destination and it doesn't have a good storyline behind it, I would say that's tough, because how are you, what you're doing any different than Pinterest or Instagram or anything like that? So if you really want to do a photo essay, you need to make sure that there's a solid story behind it and that that story isn't basically just a roundup of 10 things. If there is a solid story, there's some really nice markets for that in some of these indie publications that I was just mentioning. There's one, I want to say it's Suitcase, that has, again, it's like an all-feature publication, but they run two photo essay features every month. So there definitely are some of those. There's also magazines like Outdoor Photography and magazines that are travel and photography-oriented that can be good places for those as well. So I think that's all the questions I've got here. I look forward to seeing you all next week if you're around. So have a great weekend, you guys. Bye-bye.